We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit
mte.com.
Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better
since 1936.
This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers
since 1947.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
Right now that time, 8:18, and it is Wednesday morning, today the 25th of February. And again, with us this morning in studio, we have Rutherford County Mayor Joe Carr. How are you this morning?
I'm well, Scott. How are you doing?
I'm good.
I ran over here.
Literally ran.
I park up at the square, and then on my way down, I have people grab me. Hey, Mayor Carr, I need to talk to you for a second. Can it really be just a second? Because I don't want to run late with Scott.
I love the ones that are like, just take a second. And next thing you know, you've been standing there for an hour. Yeah. Those are always the best.
Yeah, those are the ones that worry me because I am really bad about needing to be not just on time, but I like, you know, when I come in here, I try to be 5 minutes early.
Yeah.
Just to kind of just level set everything. Just make sure you know that there's no apprehension on you. Is car coming or not, right?
that way you can breathe a second, you know, just power down.
I try to be early, and when I'm not, then I'm not early, I'm running a little late. It just drives me insane, Scott. I just like, my wife will tell you, it's just like, he's not right when he's running late.
I think the majority of wives out there will say that their husbands are just not right.
True statement.
Overall.
Well, there's probably some truth to being not right. It's not like they're making it up. There's some validity, I'm sure.
But I'm not wrong. I know one of our stories on our site is about Mayor Carr blocks unlawful ethics measure.
Right.
So what is all that about?
So the headline's not quite right.
Okay.
Just to be fair, I didn't block an ethics measure. What I did was I vetoed a resolution that came out of steering committee at the behest of the chairman of the steering committee and went on to the full commission. It came out of steering committee 7-0 and it went to the full commission. It passed 21-0. And I violated that resolution because according to our county attorney, according to my chief of staff, who's an attorney, and according to CTAS, that governing body, it's not a governing body, but they provide oversight to counties and municipalities with regard to interpreting state law. And so in state law, it specifically says in TCA 5-6-106C that the mayor has the nominating authority or appointing authority to boards and commissions of boards and commissions in the county. So I appoint and the commission confirms. And that's particularly relevant if the the board or the commission by statute or private act requires a county commissioner to sit on that board or commission. So, example, the ethics committee by statute is comprised of a constitutional officer, a citizen, and three county commissioners. I appoint every year, I think in September, I appoint or reappoint those five members. All five of those members then go to the steering committee for a recommendation or not, and then onto the full commission for confirmation. That's the process. The process is really clear in code. It's been in code a long time. Everybody knows it. Everybody understands it. But the steering committee chairman decided that instead of following the law, what he would do, he was going to put in the resolution that the commission was not only going to appoint but confirm. And that, according to CTAS and the legal opinion, is an inherent conflict of interest, especially on the ethics committee. And so what I did was I vetoed it because it violated state law. And this isn't the first time the chairman of the steering committee has passed a resolution in violation of state law. So this is his second time round out about it. So I vetoed it. I had to veto it because it's against the law.
And by the way, if anybody has any questions, you can text those in at 615-893-1450. So what does all this boil down to, and how did it start, come up? And
I don't know how it started. It started because the chairman of the steering committee decided that he and the commission wanted to appoint and confirm members to the ethics committee. The law says that the mayor appoints and they confirm to any committee or board. And so I was, according to our attorney and the legal advice that I got, I had no choice but to veto the resolution, because I'm not going to sign a resolution into effect that's contradictory to state law. I did that. That happened once before in 2023, and we had a resolution on the books about changing the process of the county commission. We had an unlawful resolution on the books for 8 months. And yeah.
What was it?
So what it was the same chairman decided he, in an effort to keep me from circumventing his committee process, which I cannot do, it's not even possible, he said that instead, if you wanted to bring a resolution directly to the commission without going through the committee system, you had to have a two-thirds vote on the floor to do that. That's also a clear violation of state law. That one got passed and was in effect for 8 months before it was discovered and were repealed.
It seems like there's been a lot of talk about ethics in general lately, because you got the property assessor, you know, his name was brought up to the ethics committee through the audit of property.
And that's still an ongoing investigation. That's not done yet. And so, you know, I won't comment on that because of the ongoing TBI investigation. That, to my knowledge, they haven't closed it. So.
And then, of course, they brought your name into it as well.
Of course. It's an election year, Scott. And I think that's the backdrop on all this. It's an election year, and everybody's looking for some space to define themselves. And you know, the conventional political wisdom, you've been around politics a long time.
I've seen it.
Yes, you have. Yeah. You've seen more roadkill than most have seen in those years than most people see in a lifetime, but political roadkill. But I think the point is you know, and the listeners know, that when you get into an election year, it's the funny season. It's just, anything's going to happen. People get desperate to win, and so you just,
some years are more interesting than others. Yeah, you know, I mean,
true.
Looking back over Rutherford County history, I do recall there's been some crazy races out there, and opponents vary against each other.
Yeah, and you know, it's Rutherford County's not unique. You know, you go anywhere. I mean, as a matter of fact, even though I'm in the middle of it all, Rutherford County's better than most places. I mean, I ran for United States Senate against Lamar. Brother, that was some crazy. Some of the stuff I should just do a show on the crazy stuff I saw traveling the state. I mean, the stories I could tell. And so Rutherford County is a great place to live. You know, as bad as we think we got it inside our little bubble, we really have it really good. If you want crazy, go to Nashville. Now Nashville is some full on crazy, Scott Walker.
you know, when you look at some of the media stories and stuff out of Nashville, there have been some literally insane political battles, I guess to say, over the years.
Oh, yeah. So I have a friend of mine who's way off topic. So I like to collect, political signs of candidates. So I got a small collection of these signs. I don't know why I like to collect them, but I just think they're cool. It's memorabilia.
Where do you keep them?
I got are you kidding? I got five barns, man, full of junk. Anyway, so a friend of mine out at the Smyrna Convenience Center had somebody come by and drop off a 3 foot by, or 2.5 foot by 4 foot wooden sign of Bill Boehner when he ran for mayor in Nashville. Remember Bill Boehner in Nashville, the mayor? So I got that. So he gave that to me. So I got that as part of my memorabilia. It's a wooden sign painted blue with the white striping, and it's got the dog bone on it, everything. It's great.
Now, is that a different Bill Boehner than the one who was here in Rutherford County?
Two totally different Bill Boehners.
Rutherford,
he was the assessor for one term, and Rob Mitchell beat him.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a totally different
Bill guy. Boehner. Okay. So anyway, so I got that sign.
so when ethics complaints do come up, how are those usually handled?
That, you know, that's a great question. Ethics complaints, the ethics committee by statute and by their own charter can only take up complaints that involve a vote or finance. And that was the thing about the complaints against me. I don't vote, so there can't be a conflict there. I didn't take something for a vote, and I didn't, there was no financial part to it. So that's why the Jennings kind of dismissed everything and basically said, this is silly and frivolous, and wrote a 6-page letter completely exonerating me, which I appreciate. But the Ethics Committee does have a role, and because it is a committee that is supposed to keep our elected officials and those county employees accountable for making sure their conduct is moral. And so we have a set of ethical guidelines that are to do that, and we have a committee that is administering that. And so the veto was about the process of who should serve on that committee. And the chairman of the steering committee didn't follow the law and that process. And so that's how I had to veto it. I would argue that any elected official serving on an ethics committee that would potentially oversee an ethics charge against them shouldn't serve on the ethics committee. So I don't believe a county commissioner. I mean, this is just my opinion. I don't believe any elected official should serve on an ethics committee. I think we should have ethics committee should be of 5 or 7 citizens in the county who have an understanding of the process of government, and they get to review it. If you want to truly have a transparent process free from influence or conflict of interest, don't put an elected official on there at all.
Now,
that's just my opinion.
Right now, on that election or the ethics committee,
right,
are they all elected officials that serve?
No, all but one. That's the thing. We've got a constitutional officer. I get to appoint who serves as a constitutional officer. I could theoretically appoint myself if I wanted to. I have to appoint 3 county commissioners and 1 citizen. And I'm just saying, well, wait a minute. We got 4 elected officials on the ethics committee to potentially review ethics complaint because of behavior as it relates to their elected office. That's a conflict of interest. We don't need to have any elected officials, in my opinion. But the statute is pretty clear. Well, not the statute, but CTAS guidelines are pretty clear that you got to have 1 constitutional elected official, 3 commissioners, and 1 citizen. So we'll follow the law.
Well, one of the questions we have this morning, it says, ask the mayor why the Madison County area does not follow this. And I'm not familiar with
Madison County is Jackson, Tennessee. I know because that's where my wife's from. I do not know the circumstances in Madison County to comment.
Okay.
So I'm unfamiliar with the issue.
And let's see what else we have here. Does this apply only to the ethics committee, or does it apply to the other boards and commissions like steering or health or education or juvenile detention and planning?
Great, great question. Those are all different types of committees. The county commission has the ability to establish its committee system. By statute, I believe they're only required to have a budget committee. All the other committees are recommending committees. The budget committee is what's called a standing committee, and it's required by statute. So the county commission, because those are their committees that they use for the process by which to govern the county through the commission, sets up a committee system, and they have a lot of latitude to set up as many committees they want with whoever they want. But those committees are exclusively county commission members, just exclusively, no citizens. However, we have a number of boards and commissions throughout the county, like planning commission, zoning and appeals, codes, all these different kind of committees where the committee is populated by both commissioners and citizens. In those cases only, the appointing authority is the mayor, and with the confirmation of the by the commission, unless otherwise stipulated by private actor law.
Now, out of all these different committees that we have, mm-hmm. which one of all of them are more active than others? I mean, it does seem like recently we've heard more about ethics, but in reality, which one is?
That's probably the least active, and quite honestly, because generally speaking, I know we get in the headlines a lot, especially in election year, Scott, but it kind of skews the thinking a little bit. Rutherford County is a really pretty ethical place to work and live. And if a citizen truly has a complaint, a legitimate complaint with any evidence about unethical, immoral behavior, or certainly illegal behavior, absolutely either bring it to my attention or bring it directly to the attention of the ethics committee with the evidence, because we don't need that. But there's not, we don't get a lot of complaints. And so you're right. That's a very typically inactive committee, except when you get to election year, then all of a sudden it gets active, right?
and how do people? I mean, when you file, I guess, a complaint, a concern with the ethics committee, how do people go about doing that?
You document your complaint with the evidence, so that the chairman, currently Ted Beatty, can review it. And he reviews that information to ensure that the committee has standing. In other words, they have the authority to review it. And that's his job. And so he reviews that. And then if he finds that, yes, the ethics committee does have authority or standing to review it, then he'll calendar you to come and make the case. And then whoever the complaint is against will have an opportunity to rebut.
And one person said the mayor was not exonerated. Jennings, I guess the DA is what they're saying, referring to Jennings Jones. It says Jennings just said that he would not prosecute, just as he refused to prosecute Robert Arnold.
That's not what Jennings said. The caller did not read the 6-page letter. And I would encourage the caller to read the 6-page letter. I was exonerated.
So there's a 6-page letter.
Yeah, and I'll be glad to forward it to you.
Yeah, I didn't even read it. So.
Yeah, it's pretty boring reading. if you're having trouble sleeping, I'll send it to you. But so, yeah, it's an exoneration complete exoneration. So I don't think the caller read the letter.
And again, our number 615-893-1450. So looking at other areas of Rutherford County as a whole, what all is happening right now? Because I know last time we heard from you, the construction of the new, not autopsy center, but you...
The forensic center.
Mm-hmm. That was well underway.
Yeah.
There's going to be an ambulance station there.
We're ahead of schedule. We're on budget. There's going to be an ambulance station out there. We're doing some upgrades and renovation work for the county clerk's office for Lisa Kroll because of the volume of business on that end of the county. We're putting together the budget for operating that as we speak. Our goal was to open in the first quarter of 2027. It looks like we may be able to open at the end of 2026. We'll have to see. But the contractor has done an amazing job of bringing this thing together on time, ahead of schedule, and on budget. Well, so right now it's already dried in. So they're now working. We're putting up the brick, and the roof's on, and so we're headed that way.
And we had another question here, I guess, regarding ethics and everything, yeah, and committees, mm-hmm, in particular. It says, do you plan to overhaul and appoint new members to any committees that are not standing committees, such as budget or planning, health and education? Typically, it says the commission has appointed the commissioners and steering has made the recommendations.
Yeah, and so that is the process by the commission has over itself. With regard to health and education, that is a commission committee, and the commission appoints its members to that committee. The mayor has no role in that regard by statute. When it comes to planning, the planning commission, that is a different type of committee. That is one of those committees that I referenced that both has commissioners and private citizens on it. And when an opening comes up, then yes, that's one of those committees that I appoint, and then the commission then confirms.
Okay.
And as openings come up, I absolutely will fill those roles.
And again, with us this morning, Rutherford County Mayor Joe Carr, and our number 615-893-1450. Another question here. As county mayor, what are your top three operational priorities for Rutherford County over the next few months?
Oh, that's over for the next 4 years if I'm reelected, but over the next few months would be the same, to make sure that we manage our growth, that our growth reflects our community, that we make sure that we don't stall the growth, because I know there are those out there who would like to see no more growth, but if you're not growing, Scott, you're dying. You know that as a business owner. If you're not growing, you're dying, and dying's not good. Bad.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding.
Real bad.
Yeah.
And so we want to make sure we manage the growth, that reflects the community. And Plan Rutherford, I think, it gives us a good starting point to do that. The other thing is we want to make sure that we come in with another balanced budget. My goal is to give another COLA to the employees. They deserve that, a cost of living adjustment to account for last year's inflation. Third and finally, no new taxes. There will be no new taxes this year out of this mayor.
So what percentage rate is that cost of living adjustment? Is it the same each year?
It varies based on what we use as an index called the CPI, which is the Consumer Price Index. And last year, the Consumer Price Index, I believe, was 2.8%. So we round. So we're looking at 3.3% cost of living adjustment to account for inflation. That'll be my proposal.
Okay. Another question here dealing with property and property assessor's office and everything. It says, with property values rising, how do you respond to concerns about the impact of reappraisals and property taxes on longtime residents?
That's the law. And that I believe that we need to do. I think the whole issue is affordable housing for new first-time home buyers, number one. And number two is, how do we acknowledge the issue that our senior citizens in some ways are being taxed out of their homes? It's a very complicated issue. It's something that we're trying to address on either end of the spectrum. So on one end of the spectrum, you got new home buyers not being able to afford a $450,000 home, because that's the median new home in Rutherford County, 450 or thereabouts.
Yeah.
So you got that on one spectrum. Then on the other spectrum, you got couples who've been in their homes all their lives, mortgage is paid off, excuse me, but they can't afford the property taxes, especially in rural areas where the land is so valued so highly. So how do we get them in homes, and how do we keep seniors in homes? It's a big challenge, not just for us, but for the entire state.
Yeah, and
it's the Tennessee General Assembly that's going to have to solve this issue, Scott. That is, while there's not a lot we can do without authority or permission from the General Assembly.
You know, when I look at the cost of housing today, I can't imagine being retired. You have your house paid for, but then the cost of insurance and taxes alone, for a lot of people, that adds up to a cost well over what their monthly payment was when they were younger.
Exactly. And it's their home, and you got an elderly couple that's been there. They're in the last years of their life, and the last thing they need to deal with after conquering their mortgage, their 20 or 30 year mortgage, they conquered it. It's paid off. Now they got to worry about staying in a home they spent a lifetime paying off. That's not quite fair.
And I
get that. But we've got to have the General Assembly help in solving the problem.
And they don't have any kids in school anymore, or anything along those lines. And
well, I mean, for my family, if you're talking about kids in school, you know, that's 75% of the budget.
Yeah.
We homeschooled, and yet our 75% of our property taxes go towards funding a school system that my family and I didn't directly didn't benefit from. I mean, I get it. I understand why it's that way, and I'm not complaining, but I get the logic.
Man, and if you had a nice home with a family farm that you had and worked over the years, I mean, that if you were to save monthly to pay for that annual tax, the property taxes and everything, that could easily run you $500 a month.
Oh yeah.
And that's a lot if you're retired, and then again couple in insurance with that and get up to $800-$900.
Yeah. Now the flip side to that is, and there's always a flip side to everything, right? So that's what we do. We argue all sides so all the facts are out there. The demographic with the greatest net worth is the boomers. My bracket. So here I'm 68. I'll be 68 in a couple of few weeks. And you know, I have my age bracket over 55 has the greatest net worth of any other demographic. But that's not a fair statistic either, because there's a lot of senior citizens that do not experience that wealth. And it's not a lot of wealth. It's just not. So it's a complicated issue. It's something we have got to address. First time home buyers on one end, and senior citizens being able to stay in their home on the other end.
And for those home buyers out there, I know interest rates right now, I think they're 7% plus, you know, some of them, depending on what you're getting, between 6% and 7%+ interest, which you hear, and it does sound scary, because just a matter of what, 12 to 24 months ago, we were looking at 3% interest rates.
Yeah, it's different. I think the rates have come down quite a bit since then, but nonetheless, they're still high compared to what they were in the first Trump term. They went nuts, obviously, when President Biden came in for a lot of reasons, and now I think they're coming back down. But you and I both know it's always slower coming down than it is going up. They seem to rise. Gas prices, Scott, always seem to rise quicker than they come down.
They really do overnight.
So it's like mortgage. It's everything like that. It always goes up quicker than it comes down. Doesn't matter what it is.
That's true. This next question revolves around the jail. And I know you've said before, we've got to have a new jail built within the next 4 or 5 years.
We got to either new jail or we got to do something with the existing jail to deal with the overcrowding, because we are seriously overcrowded. That's correct.
It says here, we need schools and we need a new jail. And have you given any thought to having a facility out in the county, kind of like Sheriff Joe in Maricopa County, Arizona, that is bare bones, concrete pads, cots, tents, and bologna sandwiches for all non-violent, low-risk offenders?
The answer to that is literally the construction of this jail and how it is constructed, the square footed, indeed the materials used, are governed in statute, literally state law, where we're very restricted in how we do this and the way we do it by state law. And that's because of the federal system. And the one thing we're trying to avoid is getting a judge to put an order in saying, you're going to have to shut that jail down because it's overcrowded, or we're at a federal judge saying, you know what, we're going to build the jail and then we're going to send you the bill. And because that's what we're trying to avoid. Now, we're a few years away from that, but I'm telling you, we are on that slope that says if we don't start addressing this now, because this is a 5-year project. If everything goes perfectly on schedule, we won't open this new jail until 2030, the summer or fall of 2030. That's how long this takes. But Michael Smith and I, my finance director, we are absolutely committed to building this jail without raising property taxes. And we believe we can do it. I need the help of the commission to do it, but we shouldn't raise property taxes to build a jail. And I don't think we'll have to. I really don't. But I got to have the cooperation of the county commission.
You know, I remember when a lot of laws started... went into effect surrounding jails and prisons, because I remember it was in the early 90s that the Tennessee State Prison in Nashville, they got shut down after lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit because of what they called inhumane conditions.
Yeah, it's overcrowding, it's a deteriorating facility, it's all those things. And that's when the federal government steps in, you have got a serious, serious problem.
Yeah.
And we're going to avoid that as long as I'm mayor. If I can get the cooperation commission. And I will say this, the commission has been very cooperative. They get it. We've been working on this for 2 years already. And I want to thank the commission for voting to pass out the programming money so that we could start finding out, okay, what do we need? What does this need to look like? What's the 5, 10, and 20-year plan for this jail? You know, typically Rutherford County doesn't look too far ahead. We're starting to look, trying to look farther ahead, so that when this jail in 15 or 20 years is overcrowded, have this administration made preparations for it to expand at a minimal cost. Because, you know, as the population grows, so does your jail population. It's just math. So we're at 400,000 people in this county, and the last time we built a jail, we were at 200,000. So there you go.
You know, they pointed out violent versus nonviolent, and they pointed out low-risk offenders. But I've noticed and I've read lots of information and psychological studies on those who are in a jail or a prison, and the psychological status of their well-being in general changes once they're in the confines of a jail.
And it's not good. It changes for the worse, not the better, Scott. And that is that's a big problem of overcrowding. That's a big problem with a deteriorating facility. It gets on your mind. What we want to do, and I've charged this working group with doing, is two things. One, how can we build a jail that lowers the operating cost, the annual operating cost, to be more efficient to the taxpayer financially. That's number one. How can we lower the cost of operation with this new construction? Number two, how can we lower the rate of recidivism? Is there a way to design a jail and to construct a jail and the way to operate a jail so it lowers that recidivism rate? And Bill Cope, our director over at County Workhouse, does a really good job. As a matter of fact, the County Workhouse is the tops in the state and one of the tops in the country at providing programs and services to lower that recidivism rate. And so we've gone to Bill and said, Bill, we want you to be a part of what does this facility need to look like? How does it need to operate that lowers recidivism and keeps operating costs low so it's less of a burden on the taxpayer? There's a real opportunity here for us, and I don't want to blow it, Scott.
Now, in that work center,
yeah,
are beds laid out in larger rooms where there's like 10 beds, or are they individual cells too?
Yes. And so that it just depends. Absolutely. The answer to that is yes. It's not either or. And so that's what we want to do. We want to create something that it gives both space and security. And, you know, again, they're in jail. They're being punished for something they did. And so when they get out and they complete their punishment, though, when they've served the time and they've paid their debt, we don't strap them, like you said earlier, with the psychological effects of being in jail for 5 or 10 years or whatever it is, and they come out, and then their likelihood of returning is 90%. We can do better than that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, yes, we have an obligation to make sure they serve their time. There's an ad obligation. We have an obligation to make sure it's done humanely. And I think we have an obligation to the taxpayer to say, how can we do this affordably, yet lower the cost of recidivism and the operating costs? I think we can do all three.
We got to take a short break.
Sure.
But when we come back, we'll get to some of these other questions here. One of them is asking about county spending.
Good.
One's asking about a deficit,
uh-huh,
and also are we spending more than what we get in revenue? But we'll get to all those questions in just a minute. I'm going to take a short break. The time right now, 8:50. You're tuned to WGNS. And with us today in studio, Rutherford County Mayor Joe Carr. And you can text questions to us at 615-893-1450.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Hi, I am Tina. You never know what you may find at the Habitat Restore.
Hi, I'm Wendy.
Hey, this is Rocky. You never know what you'll find at the Habitat Restore.
Shopping at the Restore.
Habitat Restore has furniture.
At a great bargain price.
Couches, beds, tables.
We have it all.
At the Habitat Restore.
Shopping at the Restore, yeah.
If it's here today, you better get it.
Because it may be gone tomorrow.
We're hiring at the Habitat Restore. Stop by 850 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard for more information.
WGNS is powered by Middle Tennessee Electric. Want to take charge of your energy bill? Download the free MyMTE app to track your usage, pay bills, and report outages right from your phone. Download in the App Store today.
Holden Hardware has been serving the hardware needs of this community since 1948. This is Raleigh Holden, Jr. I want to thank our many customers who have helped to keep us in business all these years. I also want to invite those who may be new to this community or have not been in the store lately to visit us. Come experience a unique hardware buying atmosphere with wood floors, old furniture and fixtures, along with a helpful and knowledgeable sales staff. Holden Hardware on the west side of the public square since 1948.
This message brought to you by the Central Tennessee Regional Solid Waste Planning Board. Visit RecycleRightTN.com for tips, ideas, and locations on where to recycle near you. That's RecycleRightTN.com.
Recycle right, it's all on you. Don't be trashy, recycle classy, recycle right, Tennessee.
Go to RecycleRightTN.com.
Recycle right, Tennessee.
Local farmers, local meats, vegetables, and other produce at the Winter Spring Rutherford County Farmers Market.
Bundle up and make your way every Friday at Lane Agri Park.
Hi, this is Dan with Music World and Drummer's Den. Our prices are as good or better than the box stores. I don't think you'll do better by shopping online than you would by coming in. Something new we've just added to our repertoire is drum repairs. You can have drums cut, covered, rewrapped, new hardware. We will fix them, make them look like new again. I'd like to thank you for coming by to see us again at 2762 South Church, right across from the golf course. Music World and Drummer's Den. Thank you very much for being our customers.
This is Peter Demas. Come eat with us at Demas's Restaurant. A lot of times when you get steamed vegetables such as broccoli or cauliflower, it's either soggy. One of the things that we wanted to do was make certain that it was still soft, but still had a little bit of a crunch to it. And so we worked on the procedure of how to cook that. And then all of our vegetables are seasoned with our seasoned salt. We keep that seasoned salt at home, and I can tell you almost all the vegetables I cook at home have the seasoned salt on it. Come eat with us at Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Again with us in studio, Rutherford County Mayor Joe Carr. So right before the break, we had a couple of other questions here. It says, currently we have an $18 million deficit. Now, is that referring to a specific category of funds?
Yes. The biggest part of that is what's called the cafeteria fund out of education. The lion's share of that deficit, and it's a paper deficit. It's not a real deficit. This is a great process question for the listener. We will get a federal grant in 2026 that we haven't spent until 2027. So we carry that over. So we take the revenue in 2026, but we're not going to spend it till 2027. So that in 2027 looks like a deficit. And what it is, it's not. We took it in 2026. So it would be technically a surplus in 2026, but we don't spend it till 2027. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so we have that kind of thing. But for the first time to my knowledge ever, Rutherford County has balanced budgets 3 years in a row, and we will balance our budget this year. And I will tell you, the proof is in the pudding. We are one of only 54 counties nationwide out of 3,100 that have three AAA bond ratings. This county's financial shape has never been better. And it's illustrated by those three AAA bond ratings and the fact, Scott, we're going to build a $300 million plus dollar jail without raising property taxes. I don't know that any county in the state has ever undertaken a project like that without raising property taxes. We're not going to do it. Not for that.
Another one of the questions was, is the county spending more than what it takes in revenue?
No, we can't spend or collect anything without it going through the county commission. So the answer is everything that we spend is reflective in the budget that was passed. So the answer is no, we are not.
And as far as taxation, when you look at the different forms of taxation that the county does collect, mm-hmm. such as property taxes,
sales taxes, and excise tax, those we get a little bit on all that stuff, yeah.
And how are we doing as a whole as far as those tax collections on utilizing that money to pay for everything, the operation of the county,
That is a great point when people talk about the size of government and this kind. The size of government is determined at this county level by our projected revenue collections. So we spend every dime we collect. Now, what that spending mean? We don't spend more than we collect, but we spend everything we collect. But including in that spending, just like your budget, means I'm going to put 10% in savings. I'm going to tithe 10%. So your budget includes those kind of things. So Michael Smith and I have been real good about saving money so that we don't have to raise taxes, if that makes any sense. And so we have the largest general fund balance or fund balance that we've had probably ever. And our debt to our debt and population ratio is extraordinarily low right now. So the county is doing phenomenal. Let me give you an example. Williamson County, I believe, has like $1.6 billion of debt. Rutherford County has $600 million in debt. And we're servicing that debt all the time at an accelerated rate. We're in great shape, truly great shape.
We're almost out of time, but another question regarding spending. Mm-hmm. The idea of purchasing Bank of America, uh-huh. converting that into county offices, mm-hmm. where does all of that stand today?
So we're waiting on the completion of our due diligence. The county commission has authorized me to sign the contract once that due diligence is done. We're not quite complete. I think we're probably within 30 or 60 days of completing that. Once that is complete, then we will begin doing design work to find out how we want to reconfigure the BOA building. And then once that's complete, we will begin renovation of the facility.
And another question mm-hmm. that was dealing with that Bank of America building, and that's on East Main at what, Spring? North Spring? Another question dealing with that was talking about how the person who owns it now, they bought it for around $2 million and they're selling it to the county. Well, originally for $9 million, now $8
million. Right.
And I guess they're asking if that's high or is it unreasonable?
Well, we solicited the help of a professional to determine the value. And this professional, a highly regarded commercial real estate professional, counseled us is that during the period of COVID, which is when the building was sold, and the after COVID market are completely two different markets. And it's like we're returning to the pre-COVID real estate market was different than the COVID market, which is different than the current market. The fact of the matter is Rutherford County and Murfreesboro nationally are high demand destination points. When you have that kind of demand on real estate, like housing, the prices go up. And so we needed that facility because of its location and proximity to the downtown.
And once it's complete, if you move forward with buying it, renovating mm-hmm. it, you're looking at about what, $17
million? Maybe 15 to 16, maybe 17 on the upside. We won't know. We're going to have the architect's going to come to us with different options. That hadn't been determined that. But yeah, the total package could be 15 to 17.
And we're already out of time.
Alrighty.
But again, with us this morning,
enjoy it, Scott.
It was good. Rutherford County Mayor Joe Carr, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. This is good. Always enjoy it. Tell your dad I said hello.
We'll do it again.
Yes, sir.